Bitcoin, crypto, bubbles, passive indexation. There's a lot of financial jargon out there. Old Mutual can help you make sense of it all and give you great advice to make the right decisions. If you've got a question or want to know how to get the most out of your money, call them on 0860 60 60 60, or speak to an Old Mutual financial advisor or your broker. Today's the day. Get great financial advice so you can do great things. Old Mutual is a licensed financial services provider. What a privilege. Imtiaz Suleiman, founder and chairman of Gift of the Givers, our Make Money Monday special edition guest this evening. How nice of you to have you on the show again. How are you, Imtiaz?
Fine, Bruce. Thank you very much.
It's nice to have you with us. Now, we had you on as a shapeshifter a couple of years ago, and you told us the story of Gift of the Givers. But just bring us up to speed with the work that you've been doing in the last while.
Well, it's been a very busy last 2 to 3 years, especially the last year. Locally, well, right now, we're busy with drought interventions in the Western Cape, boreholes, a lot of boreholes in the area, a lot of water requirements on the west coast of Cape Town, further requirements in Sutherland, no water in the area, all the boreholes are dry. We've sent in a team. We're drilling 200 new boreholes in Sutherland, providing fodder for the farmers, providing school items for the kids at school, blankets, food parcels, LED lights in Sutherland. Then last week we got a call that Mossel Bay and Lanesburg are in big trouble in terms of fodder. We did our first delivery of fodder on Friday. Western Cape MEC for Finance, Dr. Ivan Mayer, was with us when we did that. On Saturday we delivered to Mossel Bay. To Wednesday we're delivering again to Mossel Bay. Thursday in Aberdeen in Free State, they're also in trouble. And we've now been called by several quarters to get involved in the protest in Hermanus. We've already sent teams there. We've spoken to the people. And by Wednesday, we should be starting an intervention in Hermanus. So there's lots of things happening in the country. And internationally, of course, we're involved in a big way in Syria, in Yemen, in Somalia, in Malawi, in Zimbabwe. Lots of things happening.
How many people are working under the banner of Gift of the Givers now?
Locally, 120 people. And that's 5 offices.
Is that all? I mean, you're taking on so many projects. I'm stunned, actually, that it's so few.
Yeah, well, sometimes we have bloated staff, you have reduced efficiency.
Sure.
We have very good project managers. We have teams that are dedicated, because nobody works here for the money. They work for the heart and for the spirit. And if dedicated, committed people who don't know the difference between Monday and Sunday, between a weekday and a public holiday, their only aim is to help people in need in any part of the country, in any part of the continent, and in any part of the world.
And if you're not paying them, they're not employees, so they don't fall under the Labour Relations Act, so they can work 7 days a week and 60 hours a day.
No, they are being paid. They are being paid. I don't have volunteers. The only volunteers we have are the medical and search and rescue teams that come with us on international missions, and you don't need that every day.
No. But these are professionals, and that's the point that you make here, is that this is a career, it is a professional. These are people who could go and work in a large corporation if they chose to do so. They happen to choose to spend their time improving other people's lives and are remunerated on that basis.
Yes. But a lot of the people that work for us are lower level, employees. We give an opportunity to people. They are packers, vehicle drivers, truck drivers, people who count goods, pack parcels, deliver them, and a few people, of slightly higher level in terms of degrees and diplomas to deal with government, to deal with projects and to set up projects. And at the same time, those of lower level are trained, they're given skills, they improve, they go up the ladder, they get opportunity, they get, like for example, in Nizhna last year, two ladies were given the task of running the entire operation, a 20 million rand operation, for the fires in Nizhna. Two ladies, from the organization who went up the ladder, who learned the skills and ran an entire project from the ShopRite warehouse in Nizhna.
Now, you've been going for nearly a quarter of a century. It's hard to believe, but you have. The latest figures I've got is you've delivered aid of about 1.8 billion rand, 42 countries. I mean, are those numbers still accurate, or has that number risen?
2.3 billion to 43 countries.
And the funding, that's anybody who's ever tried to raise funds at a cake sale for a new roof for the church or whatever the case might be, knows how hard it is to raise that kind of money in order to do good. No matter, people are cashed up, times are tough. Where does that 2.3 billion rand come from?
South Africans. People always think we've got international funders. We don't have international funders. But I need to qualify that. In recent years, some money has come from international people who've seen our work on international media and maybe through websites, or online kind of following our work. and you get maybe $10 from here, €5 from there, €50 from somewhere else. You get that kind of money. But there's no active soliciting for money, either internationally or locally. 99.9% of that money is from ordinary South Africans. South Africans, again, who see our work, the media travels with us, they publicize what we do, people are happy with what we do, and you get accused people waiting to deposit to support you for what you do. And it comes both in cash and in kind.
You qualified as a medical doctor. You had your own private practice in Pietermaritzburg, late 80s into the early 90s. And you gave that up. I think it was just after the 1994 elections. And you decided, no, it's time to actually concentrate on Gift of the Givers. And you started that. You had started that, I think, in 1992. That became a big focus of your life. At a time of huge optimism in South Africa, you saw that even amongst the optimism and the sense that Madiba magic was prevalent, that there'd always be need, not only here, but anywhere in the world.
Well, actually, it wasn't something that I thought about. It was a spiritual instruction given to me. I never in my wildest dreams thought I was going to form an organization. I never even had that idea to form an organization. I was in Turkey. I met a spiritual teacher, a Sufi master, in 1991. I went to a Muslim holy place where people of all religions, all countries, all nationalities were there. I saw them getting along very harmoniously, even though the thinking was different, the ideas were different, the concepts were different. But the one thing stood out. There was love between people. There was understanding and rational behavior between all of them. And I loved what I saw. I came back in 92, 6th August 1992. It was a Thursday night. The spiritual master looked me in the eye, and to cut it short, just told me, you will form an organization. The name will be Gift of the Givers. You will be serving all people of all races, of all colors, of any geographical location, of any political affiliation. And this is an instruction for you for the rest of your life. And then he told me, whatever you do is done through you and not by you. So there's no place for ego. It's a spiritual connection, and you are guided in what you do.
So what role does money then play in your life? Because this is the Make Money Mondays special edition feature where we talk to people. And recently we've just had, I mean, it started with Kate Turkington, Auntie Kate, also a very spiritual person, Professor Jonathan Janssen, Max Dupreer. People who have got good brains in their heads, to whom money is useful and nice, but people don't obsess about it. I get a sense that you don't either, unless it's, of course, the money that you need to do the work.
Yes, you know, money is important. You know, you've got families, you've got children, you have to give them an opportunity. You don't want to be standing for the handout. You don't want to be among the unemployed. You don't want to be dependent on others. So yes, you need a certain amount of money, you know, to live, to have a home, to have education, to have medical aid, to take care of yourself, not to be a burden on others, not to be a burden on the state, but to run after, you know, totally and totally committed to collecting money all the time. We have a simple philosophy, you know, a simple teaching. What you don't use is not yours. So you can have 1 billion, 2 billion, and 5 billion. But if you're only going to spend 10 million from there, only 10 million is yours. And if you're going to spend 100 million, but you're not going to use that house, that car, that yacht, that holiday resort somewhere else, it's not yours. So what are you pursuing that kind of, you know, life for, a materialistic life, chasing after things, having stress, something that you can't use?
Yeah, it's such a wonderful philosophy. What you don't use is not yours. I mean, is that the basis of it?
Yes, what you don't use. And somebody after you is going to blow it away for all your hard work.
I mean, somebody like a Warren Buffett, I mean, his most simple quote on giving money away was, you can only wear one pair of pants at a time.
That's perfect. Like, you can only drive one car at a time, exactly. And you can only sleep in one bedroom at a time.
And that's the philosophy as well. I mean, when you look at people like that, people who've made a lot of money, and Patrice Motsepe, of course, a couple of years ago, also committed a large portion of his family's wealth to doing good. That's critical. People who've made money in business are important to your cause as well. Do you admire the sort of financial success of the Gateses and the Buffetts and the Motsepes?
Yes. I hope everybody makes a lot of money. The more people make money, and as long as they recognize that in their money, there is a place for someone else, somebody who needs an opportunity, not a handout, but an opportunity. So if everybody makes money and not dependent on others and use a percentage or a portion of that money to help uplift other people, it's very good. And I pray as many people as possible, you know, have the means where they're not dependent on others, but recognize that there is someone who needs that opportunity to uplift someone else. You know, I wish all those kind of people all the best and all the success.
Are South Africans by nature generous?
Absolutely. one of the most generous nations on earth, you know, from my own experience. Even in times of difficulty, they take out money. When the economy is down, when the petrol price is up, when there's food inflation, when school fees are gone up, when medical aid rates are high, people still dig into their pockets. They want to help each other. The Nizhna fire is a classical example where people just pour their money out to help people, you know, and the best part is the people they don't know. But the drought in Cape Town, when we made a call for water, the water poured out from all over Johannesburg, Cape Town, Durban, all over the country, even from the small towns, and even for international projects. And one stands out for me, I keep mentioning this over and over again. In 2011, when we responded to the famine in Somalia, when so many children were dying every day, there was a small school in Orange Farm. The kids in that school don't have breakfast, they don't have a lunchbox, they don't have school shoes, they don't have a jersey for winter. They walked to school. They got to that school. They said Somalia is in difficulty. The kids in that school raised 40,000 rand.
No, but that's got to be motivating. I mean, every day that you see that kind of selfless behavior has to be absolutely motivating. Make Money Monday is brought to you by Sanlam Private Wealth. Your wealth, our craft. Let's talk about whether or not the founder and the chairman of South Africa's most effective charity has got a pension. Do you have a pension plan?
Nope.
No.
No pension plan currently because I don't have much earnings at the moment.
No, but that's the what is so interesting. Do you anticipate spiritually that it'll all just be okay? That as you've taken care of people, one day should you need to be taken care of, that it'll happen?
Yes. That's, you know, that's a given. That's a spiritual teaching. Of course, you've got to tie your camel too. But the spiritual teacher told me, like I'm like a spiritual teacher to you, I'm also like a father to you. And in everything that I tell you, it will happen. You'll be taken care of. You'll be looked after. And everything will be worked out. And up till now, you know, Bruce, I'm not a rich man, but I'm a satisfied man. And I'm a contented man. And everything that I needed so far, I have.
And that's an extraordinary faith, isn't it?
Yes, you know, this thing cannot be drawn by anything else but faith.
Yeah.
My father told me you're crazy. He said you got, you know.
We spent all this money on your education and you're doing what? Yes,
that he said, what are you doing? You know, you said you're a doctor and you've got three practices and you're doing so well. Do you know what you are doing? I'm afraid for what's going to happen. And several years later, he passed on now, you know, 2 years ago. And several years ago, he told me, you know what? I'm very proud of you.
Oh,
I wish I had the faith that you have. I wish, you know, I had the belief that you have. Carry on, my son. It's the best thing you could have ever done.
Isn't that nice? I mean, that acknowledgement and that appreciation for the work.
Yes, you know. And when he saw the type of people getting assistance, he met McGowan's father, Malcolm McGowan, you know, in Ramley before my father passed on. And he saw that, you know, that this hardship in Mr. McGowan's eyes and in his family. And he saw the hardships in so many other people's eyes. And he said, you know what? Just carry on. You're helping so many people. It's a blessing. God Almighty, he said his words, God Almighty will take care of you. Again, we were teaching that when parents pray for their children, you know, those prayers are answered.
You grew up in Potchefstroom in Northwest. You did go to school in Durban and eventually to the University of Natal Medical School, as it was known in those days. When you, the connections, the friends that you made in those days, have they been supportive? Do they work with you? Do they help?
Well, you know, none of those friends are involved with me anymore. But when I meet them sometimes, or, you know, or maybe on a plane or in some city or some function, I met some friends after 20 years, 25 years. And they say, you know what? We remember you. We grew up with you. We support you. We pass the word around. And we tell everybody that we knew you. So, you know, it's a warm support. It's there. Some of them I see, you know, after years into the bank statements, they financially support our projects. We don't meet each other. I've met some of the friends. I go to Potchefstroom quite often. It's my hometown. My family is still there. But everybody has moved on. Unfortunately, in small towns, all the kids leave and they move in bigger cities. And most of them are in Johannesburg. So you don't see them when you go there. And when you meet those ones and from the medical school, some of the doctors you've come across, you know, again, fully supportive. You see them in medical functions. But in essence, we've built a new team. People from across the country, across race, across religion. Because when the school that we went to that time were one race schools, you know, so you didn't have friends from other colors. Sure. You didn't have them in medical school. So it's a new friendship that has developed after New South Africa and people from different fields joining you.
Do you have any extravagances whatsoever? Do you ever allow yourself an extravagance of any kind?
No. No, I'm a very simple person. I don't have any materialistic thoughts or desires. I had a good practice. I changed cars, you know, 6 times in 5 years. You know, I traveled overseas. Nothing of that kind of things interests me anymore. I have no desire for clothes, no desires for holidays, no desire for outings, because all I see is suffering of people.
Yeah.
And when you see suffering of people, your own life takes a back seat. But at the same time, whilst having that, you have a dichotomy. You don't want to neglect your family. You don't want them to lose out on what you've seen in terms of travel early in life. So you try to have a balance. Take them out, but of course it's not as much as I used to do it when I was a doctor. I can't take them to so many places like I could do when I was a doctor. But they're understanding. They've met the spiritual teacher. They appreciate my work, and all of them want to get involved with me in what I do.
But are you able to send them to university? Have you been able to give them the same opportunities as your parents afforded you? You haven't sort of become obsessive about, no, my children will suffer along with me, or my children will go without.
No. You know, in fact, they were better off than me. All my, you know, because of the earlier years, all of them, they could go to varsity with no student loans to pay. I had student loans, I had bank loans, I had bursaries all to be repaid back. I didn't have, my father bought me a car, you know, only when I qualified. They got cars much earlier. They had flats in where they were studying. All that kind of stuff.
It's an important perspective, isn't it? I mean, this is your choice. It's not their choice. If they choose to follow, if they choose to support, that is, you know, that'll be their journey. But it's an important distinction to draw, I guess.
Yes, you know, each one must have his own decision or her decision. Tomorrow they mustn't say, I forced them to do something. Even in their career choices, I said, choose what you want. And my first daughter changed course 3 times. I said, the father is paying, it's fine. So but I said, at the end of the year, life and father is not here, you must be happy with what you chose.
Yeah.
And eventually she became a dietitian. My son became a computer engineer, worked for MultiChoice, and suddenly last year gave up a top-paying job, resigned and joined me.
Did you say, what are you thinking? I spent all this money on your education.
I said, you realize what kind of life this is? I said, I've messed up my family life. I told my wife, please explain to him that, you know, this, he must be very careful before he comes in. I've ruined my life, you know, in terms of, in inverted commas, no family time, big sacrifices to build what it is now 26 years later. I said, if he wants to come in, he can come in, but he must not go the same road that I went.
But here is something interesting. I mean, you married, I'm assuming, fairly young. Your wife signed up for a different life. She married the doctor with 3 practices who got, you know, 5 cars in 6 years. That was a good life. How did you bring her along on the journey?
Well, when it started, the doctor didn't have 3 cars, you know, at that time. The doctor was still studying and had no means that time to, you know, dependent on them.
So she's gone full circle from nothing to lots back to not very much.
When I lost my practice, well, I basically gave it up. My wife stood 2 o'clock in the morning in a flea market selling scarves. Yeah. There's a huge sacrifice she made because she ran a preschool because we had no income. You know, when I closed, when I was in Bosnia, she said, I have to close these practices. These patients are coming here and sitting for 3 weeks. Somebody's going to die waiting for you.
Yeah.
I said, close them. And you know, and she's sacrificed all the way. She was with me when she met the teacher. She's a disciple of the spiritual order. She's the head of the counseling division in Gift of the Givers. She's also a founder member, and she has no regrets for what we've done.
What scares you about money? Does anything scare you about money? Do you have faith that it'll... Greed? Yeah, tell me about greed.
Greed and extravagance and power. You know, I have no issue. Money is not a problem.
Yeah.
It's the people's attitude to money that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, people who will do anything possible to make money, and as I said, you can only spend, you know, what you spend is yours, what you don't use is not yours. And the kind of things people will go to make that kind of money, losing jobs, state capture, greed in corporate companies, you know, the Steinhoff issue, KPMG, so many different types of things. How many jobs get affected? How many lives get affected? How many, because of personal greed and want and want and want. And yet that money could be put to more active use, improving the lives of so many millions of people. And you would be a great person who's greedy, would still have plenty for himself, but in the process would have brought so many people online and helped them.
Imtiaz Suleiman, it's always such a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for again making time and for joining us on The Money Show. Make Money Mondays for other people, founder and chairman of Gift of the Givers.